Okay, so my name is Marge Cohen, and I'm going to make a presentation in general about health and literacy for women and youth, and then we're going to have three other presentations that relate to global challenges faced by women and youth, and hopefully the ideas will sort of resonate through each of the presentations, and we look forward to some questions right after each presentation, but mainly a discussion after all of them. So what I'd like to do is just sort of share some issues related to obstacles in improving women's health, some concerns about gender inequity and gender-based violence, and begin a discussion on global literacy that will actually be continued by Judith. So the obstacles from what my vantage point from both the literature and my work in Chicago with women and HIV as well as in Rwanda is unequal power relationships between men and women have an incredible impact, really creating reduced opportunities for education and work. And my sense is that when we focus solely on women as important for their reproductive role, either, for example, for HIV, passing the virus on to men or passing it on to their children, we really limit our understanding of what women want and what our interaction with women would be to make for better public health and a better world. Violence is significant as a worldwide epidemic, so it's very hard to address anything related to women's health without addressing it. And then there are specific issues that women experience as caregivers in their family, issues of insufficient food and poverty, making for malnutrition, and in many parts of the world, cooking with unsafe fuels cause pulmonary problems that women are more likely to get. So there's lots of ways that these obstacles play out. This is a schema by someone who I like a lot named Jukes, who basically puts out what the issues of gender inequity and gender-based violence are in their relationship to HIV. And I think the most important part of this schema is that the power inequities in relationships and in society enforcing those roles basically cause specifically absolute abuse, but also cause psychological distress that is responsible also for risky behaviors, making a continuum of risk related to rape as well as HIV and stress and responses to violence, including depression, that we really have to address if we're going to take women's health seriously. In HIV, the predominance of girls and young women with HIV is shown, I think, well here, with the red lines or orange lines being girls and women and the blue being men, and you see in every country you look at, it's twice the rate among girls. And then just to say that the way that gender-based violence and the ways gender inequity affect women is why we have so much transmission of HIV, and you can see here it's related in terms of first sexual experiences, being forced, issues of literacy, absolutely, insufficient condoms, just every way that health and the structural issues in society prevent women from being healthy and actually encourage them to be part of the HIV transmission scene. And just to, because sometimes a lot of what we do is depressing, or feels depressing. I actually am pretty optimistic in general and also believe that there's ways to actually address these very difficult areas that require us to actually address them head on. And one of the studies, the IMAGE study, which looked at an intervention with microfinance for AIDS and gender equity, looked at basically addressing poverty and violence and the inability to negotiate safe sex by giving education that was actually really gender specific and challenging negative attitudes. It wasn't just like, have you experienced violence in your life? Did you experience it before you were 18? What's next? But it was also like, well, how can we actually address issues in your relationships that will make some difference? And there was a significant change in intimate partner violence. So I think those are the kind of ways we have to think of all the challenges that we'll be hearing about today. Okay, so literacy, which two of the is actually part of all of our presentations, but some of us are going to emphasize it a little bit more. So there are like almost a billion people, youth and adults, who are still illiterate. So that's like one out of seven, I think, or six in the world. And clearly the female share is about two-thirds, so that's not equitable at all. So two-thirds almost of the 773 adults who are illiterate are women. And it's, of course, geographically the way you'd expect in terms of Africa being the hardest hit, not blue, basically, in terms of literacy issues. And the same for youth as well as for adults. So in the U.S., apparently there are 80 million Americans who have limited health literacy. And, you know, the issue of health literacy versus literacy is one I think we should sort of think about. In Detroit, a recent article cited 47% of people who live in Detroit as basically functionally illiterate. And they're not talking about, like, just the instructions and being able to manage a disease through medications, but rather being part of the world as a productive person. Gordy, who's taking a picture right now, is one of his favorite stories is actually related to Frederick Douglass's tale in his autobiography of learning how to read. And I don't know if you remember it from when you read it or thought about this, but it's very interesting because, in fact, the first mistress slave owner that he is put in contact with is a very caring person initially. The institution of slavery knocks that out of her, but initially she actually did teach him to read, and then after that prevented him from having any opportunities to be near anyone or have a newspaper or anything else, which continued that. And clearly, you know, the importance of literacy in every way and how institutions of our current time prevent this from being moving forward is really important. So we have a lot of indices. We have a health literacy index, which looks at all these indicators and criteria to see its relation, that we could then make relationships to health outcomes. And we have a mother's index, which includes literacy and formal schooling, to look at how mothers are doing in terms of this. And the literature is really strong on how literacy is important to have a knowledge of services. You know less about mammograms and prevention cervical cancer and understanding diagnoses and medication instructions and ER discharges and follow-up if you don't have sufficient literacy. And health outcomes are also affected with increased hospitalizations, more ER use, lower use of getting vaccines, taking medicines, actually doing it, not just understanding it. For seniors, more so, it probably mediates disparities between blacks and whites as well. And knowledge of issues related to smoking and HIV and hypertension have all been documented. So the issue of how it affects women, there have been a lot of attempts now to actually, since we know for a very long time, this article's like 20 years old, of how much impact it has on children and families. Specifically, the positive effects of female literacy are thought to be economic security, solidarity among women, an enhanced status in the family, and also, of course, women are less likely to get married early, have children early, and less likely to get HIV or work in the sex industry, and apparently understand what we put out to them in terms of diseases. So how it actually improves a mother's health outcomes for the children, there's a little bit of debate about that in the literature. Some people say that, and I think sort of some of us are in this camp, that education just by itself empowers women, and since they are the primary caretakers, that probably allows them to have the skills to run their families well and encourage literacy. It obviously can liberate women, as we know from everything we've been able to garner actually from Nobel Prize almost wins as well as everything else, you know, liberates women from traditional bonds, but also from, like, I don't know if old wives' tale is a nice way of saying it, it's probably not, but obviously, tales or knowledge that is actually not based in what we actually know about health. It improves status and access. And then the issue is, like, it improves, like, when you know how to read, you know how to learn, you could think. And there's a few different ways the literature discusses the impact of this on women and their children's health and their own health. One, they feel that it increases ability to understand medical information. It allows you to trust health providers more, partly because you distrust what actually the society you came from, culturally perhaps, and you can follow instructions and do better follow-up. But I think the questions that some of this brings up, for me at least, is we actually want to have people read and learn and be educated and know how to think, not to actually fall in line, but rather to question with us the best way to make a healthy world. So some of the implications, I found some really interesting work on people who are thinking about how not to just feel comfortable in saying once we have literacy or once we do something to literacy, we've like solved a big problem, because it's obviously insufficient in terms of the inequity issues as well as probably health outcomes. And this is a really interesting one that was just in just published. So she looked at the fact that we know there's a strong association between mothers' reading skills and child mortality, and she looked in Nigeria mainly and saw that gender-based social inequality, you know, in general made mothers' decision-making power over children's health matters sort of limited. Like, if you were not able to feel that you were equal in your relationship or with the health providers, you were probably unlikely to make good decisions. So decision making by itself, which I think, you know, is a you know, synonyms are empowerment, feeling part of society, etc., are at stake here. And they looked at that in the Nigerian Demographic and Health Survey in relationship between reading skills and the and child survival related to women's decision making. And they found that among Nigerian children whose mothers had decision making power, the reading skills really helped. Like, it was a, you know, 27% lower risk of child mortality in those families. But for those children whose mothers didn't have decision-making power, the reading skills actually were not able to overcome the structural problems that women were experiencing and families were experiencing. So the idea of thinking about what structural changes that have to be made in addition to literacy, I think is really an important, I don't know, for me it seems interesting to think about. So one of the ways, there have been lots of studies actually about structural changes needed for literacy. One is financial incentives for staying in school, right? We pay people so that they don't have to leave, that their family is satisfied with them not making money otherwise, that they don't feel they have to work as a sex worker or anything else, but rather they have enough wherewithal to stay in school. And that's been shown, you know, Brazil and other places have used this, as a lot of programs in Africa as well. We know that works. This next one I found a little overwhelming to even think that people could write it. So this was giving multiple micronutrient supplementation, because the literature says that that could possibly improve mood and cognition, and with better mood and cognition, women are more likely to do well with their children and themselves. And they found that, in fact, it was very beneficial. In fact, the benefit of giving multiple vitamins, basically, and nutrition to overall cognition was equivalent to 1 year of education for all. And, you know, the literature, there's graphs that show that for every another year of education, women do better. But then they actually stratified this and found that there was 2 years of education for, it was equivalent to 2 years of education if the woman was anemic, and to 3 years of education for undernourished mothers. I mean, the thought is probably, in my opinion, that we sort of know that nutrition is good for people, and probably providing, dealing with the reality of poverty would actually have helped in both of these approaches to make changes so that women could both learn how to read, be part of society, and do better for themselves and their family. So The Lancet last May discussed the goals to have three-quarters of maternal mortality reduced by three-quarters by 2015. And really, though they talked about a lot of things. A great major part of this was that greater participation of women in education, work, and government are as necessary for improved outcomes as family planning and skilled birth attendance. So I think the way to actually balance in our work and in our understanding of these issues, issues of structural change as well as an individual woman's life, and then, you know, think about that in terms of literacy issues, poverty mitigation, dealing with, making a difference in the many families we see both in the U.S. and elsewhere, maybe we improved as we sort of think of this in a more innovative way and creative way. So the rest of the presentations are on work that is actually they're doing, so that will be sort of a different approach. But if anybody has any questions before we start on those implications or anything else, yeah. Right. Well, you know, the issues that we know in terms of financially and people by economic status able to sort of increase the number of words and all that that's been sort of out there is something that I think has been, like, making a lot of play. I think Judith has some ideas about that, so I'll let her. But the only other thing that I sort of, that rings comes to my mind when, in terms of your question, which is obviously a critical one, and I'll ask if anybody else has information on it also, is that the concept of development and women's literacy and development is, like, you know, very important right now. And if I think we should set the criteria for why that's important and how it's important, because if we don't set it for actually things that you're talking about and a woman's potential in general, the development will be an economic development that maybe, you know, helps in some way but doesn't actually address the issues of how children are treated and how women actually live. So I think it's another way we really have to think about it. Any other thoughts? No? Okay.